This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, April the 11th, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 11th of April 2014. This week our editors are Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Now, if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01 962 870 370. And again, that number, 01962 870 370. And I'd like to introduce your readers this week, who are Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And reading in for Claire Porter this week, we have Maria Head.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Now, as ever, we'll kick off with the main headlines, which this week are Stop Poisoning Us with Air Pollution. Patient who lost her sight sues GP for £1 million. Parents outraged over internet abuse. Gerry with the first headline story about air pollution. And this is a subject that crops up quite often this week.
And the headline is Stop Poisoning Us with Air Pollution. Winchester Green campaigners stormed the City Council's offices last week, just as southern England was hit by a wave of smog. Dozens of angry residents marched down Winchester High Street to demand that council chiefs take action over poor air quality in the city centre. Around 40 of them, waving banners and chanting, arrived at the Guildhall to present a copy of a complaint that Keith Taylor, Green Party MEP, is handing to the European Commission this week. The EC has taken the first steps towards prosecuting the government for failing to meet air quality targets, and Mr. Taylor says Winchester City Council has been warned that it may have to contribute towards any subsequent fine. Demonstrators were initially snubbed, with council chiefs declining to come out and accept the documentation in person. Hazel Agomba of Winchester Friends of the Earth said, "In the end, we stormed the offices in Colebrook Street. We were told that no one was available to take the documentation. We demanded to see Simon Eden, chief executive. They tried to fob us off with a business manager, but we said that it wasn't good enough. Winchester residents have a valid complaint against them and were entitled to be received by a senior member of the City Council." After some time, Mr. Eden eventually turned up to receive our document. "People are just fed up. They're really sick of it now. It's beginning to dawn on people that this problem is bad and it's going to get worse." Harmful carbon emissions in the city centre are amongst the highest in Hampshire and have been monitored by central government for 10 years. Mr. Taylor said, "Winchester City Council says it's a balance between economic prosperity and environmental health, but that's absurd. They're breaking the law. You cannot break the law a little bit." Chris Gillam of Winchester Friends of the Earth was also on the march. He said, "I just do not think the council have taken us seriously. You should not morally have laws that try to find a balance between poisoning people and not poisoning them." A spokesman for the City Council said, "There is a single air quality management area in the whole Winchester district."
Patient who lost her sight sues GP for £1 million. Meningitis went undiagnosed. A South Wanston artist, blinded by a catastrophic bout of meningitis which nearly killed her, has launched a £1 million High Court compensation bid against the GP she claims failed to spot her illness. Julie Coakley collapsed at her home in January 2008, then plunged into a deep coma during which her family were warned to expect the worst. Outlining her client's case, Susan Rodway QC told Judge Stephen Oliver Jones QC how the 48-year-old survived, but with severe disabilities, including total blindness, partial deafness, balance problems, and a facial palsy. Mrs. Coakley is suing Dr. Henrietta Rosie for failing to examine her rash properly and to treat her with antibiotics, which she alleges would have prevented her disabilities. Dr. Rosie denies liability, maintaining she carried out a comprehensive examination and that her patient showed no obvious signs of meningitis during the consultation. Mrs. Coakley, attending court, flanked by her husband and guide dog Otis, said the GP saw her at the Grattan surgery in Sutton Scotney on January the 7th, 2008. Despite a crushing headache, she had driven to the practice where Dr. Rosie examined her throat, glands, neck and chest, diagnosed an upper respiratory infection and described bed rest and plenty of fluids. Mrs. Coakley of Goldfinch Way, South Wanston, claims a vivid rash had spread over her arms and midriff, which Dr. Rosie looked at but didn't inspect closely. She said this was a telltale sign of meningococcal meningitis and should have rung alarm bells with the medic. The mother of two said she was haunted by the rash's vivid port red colour because it was the last thing she ever saw. But Dr. Rosie insisted that the rash did not appear to be meningitis related, also disputing that it was present as Mrs. Coakley described it. The doctor's lawyers were adamant her diagnosis made no difference to the outcome and denied that her examination of her patient was rushed and superficial. Cross-examining Mrs. Coakley, Dr. Rosie's barrister, David Balcombe, QC, pointed out that the appointment lasted far longer than the average consultation, adding, "Do you feel now, looking back, that this was a rushed consultation?" "I didn't feel it was a very thorough consultation," she replied. Dr. Rosie told the court she took a full history and checked Mrs. Coakley's throat, neck and glands. She denied claims that her patient told her about raging headache she was experiencing, but conceded that she did not touch the rash on her arms during the examination. "She had no reason to suspect meningitis," said Dr. Rosie, who added that if her suspicions had been aroused, she would have prescribed antibiotics immediately. Mrs. Coakley managed to drive back home after her appointment, but barely 6 hours later, husband David found her collapsed and unconscious in her bedroom. She received her first dose of penicillin at around 11 p.m. that night, the court heard, but by that time had already lapsed into a deep coma. The High Court hearing is due to last until the middle of next week, and the article is illustrated by a small inset picture of Julie Coakley and also a picture of the Grattan surgery in South Wanston, where she was seen by Dr. Henrietta Rosie.
Parents outraged over internet abuse. Primary school children targeted by trolls. School children near Winchester have been tormented by internet trolls, receiving an endless barrage of online abuse. Children aged as young as 10 and 11 in Colden Common have been sent messages via the social network site Instagram, citing hatred, violence, and in some cases even death threats. Parents have taken to Facebook to warn other parents of the dangers of allowing their children to use the program. And Colden Common Primary School is said to be hosting a specialist assembly after the Easter holidays to teach the school children about internet safety. Head teacher Sharon Taylor said the school had protocols in place for dealing with such matters. A local mother, who did not want to be named, said, "It's despicable. I was thoroughly shocked and saddened to hear this sort of abuse happens to many. It's outrageous. As a parent, you do your utmost to protect your children and keep them from harm, physical and emotional. But the internet has opened up avenues for these people, and I don't really know what to call them, really. As a parent, you wish you could stop these things happening. I cannot comprehend what type of person does this to children or adults alike. It baffles me totally. What has the world come to? In November last year, staff at Lyndhurst Junior School held an assembly entitled Lurking Trolls as part of Anti-Bullying Week, focusing on the dangers of online abuse. In January, Childline reported an 87% rise in the number of reports of online bullying in 2012 to 2013, compared to the previous year. A 41% increase in contact about self-harm has also been reported.
Thank you all. And following those headlines, we will read the death notices to you, and then Jerry will give us Christian comment. I will start off the death notices with Ayres, Lyle Ayres, on the 1st of April, aged 93 years.
Blackburn, Una Blackburn, peacefully on 4th of April, aged 90.
Boys. Florence Emily Elizabeth Boys, née Isles, on the 7th of April, aged 92.
Dearden, Betty Dearden, on the 3rd of April, aged 92.
Dickman, Gwyneth Margaret Kate Dickman, née Hopkins, on the 30th of March, after 80 well-lived years.
Lily, Peter Lily, at home on 31st of March, aged 74 years.
Mansell, Victoria Bernadette, née Norgate Mansell, in hospital on the 5th of April.
Monday, John Monday, at home on the 1st of April.
Page, Christopher Thomas Page, 28th of March, aged 61 years.
Penn, Stanley Richard John Penn, known as Stan, peacefully on 3rd of April, aged 86 years.
Priscott, Margaret Ann Priscott of Byton, Four Marks and Soldridge, on the 28th of March, aged 91.
Stairs, Doreen Grace Stairs, née Prawl, known as Pud, peacefully on 28th of March, aged 82.
And finally, Reveille, Kenneth Gordon Reveille, peacefully in hospital on the 3rd of April, aged 90 years. And Kenneth was the first treasurer of Winchester Talking Newspapers. And we'll have Christian comment, please, from Jerry. Thank you.
Which this week comes from Rosemary A. Baker and is entitled, We Must All Be Prepared to Pay the Price. As part of our Lent meetings, Christians together in the Somborns had a speaker last week who spoke on church growth. He told us about a report called From Anecdote to Evidence. Apparently, not all churches are declining in membership. Some actually have increasing numbers of people attending. Many of these are our cathedrals, or greater churches. This is interesting, as it could be seen as a return to an older model seen in the Celtic Church, where priests were sent out from a central community to smaller villages and countryside. This had the bonus of offering support and colleagueship, where nurturing could take place, as well as mentoring and learning. This could also mean some selection for roles on the basis of skills, so maximising resources. This is already happening to a degree with the development of team ministries. There are also many skills possessed by the laity which are not fully realised. Vast amounts of energy, especially in the form of time and money, are spent in maintaining church buildings. It has been suggested that they should all be given to the National Trust or English Heritage. Three of the main things people said they wanted in a church were 1, peace, 2, welcome, 3, accessibility. Peace meant solitude and space, where they could be apart from the hectic rush of daily life. Again, This could be seen as a return to past traditions, where the church offered sanctuary and, in its larger institutions, hospitality. Nowadays, it's hard to find a church that is open 24/7, and hospitality is often costly. I found one church that is always open, but sadly dare not print its name, lest it is put at risk. Welcome means a welcome for who they are and a listening ear, something that is a skill and a careful balance with intrusion, or not being asked to join the cleaning rota, which happened to my friend's elderly mother. Accessibility doesn't just mean being open and having disabled ramps and hearing loops, although these are helpful. It means having understandable worship that is simple, relevant, and in modern language. Traditional is not necessarily bad, but it does need to be explained. There is much that can be learnt from this report, and also from each other by sharing and discussion. New ventures, such as Cafe Church, work for some, but not all, and the toll on our elderly congregations of these sometimes labour-intensive initiatives has to be borne in mind. We are following a costly pathway, and as with Jesus, we turn to Jerusalem. We must all be prepared to pay the price, but not without thought and preparation.
Thank you, Jerry. And we have 9 letters to the editor today. There's been a lot of opinion in the Chronicle this week about traffic in and around Winchester. Robin starts with the first of the letters, please.
Right, and the first letter is, City must have a hidden agenda. I agree with Ron Owen, re the diversion of Andover Road. Surely nobody with half a brain would divert a busy main road through a new housing estate without compelling justification, especially as one of the reasons Eric Pickles turned the appeal down in 2011 was the loss of historical dimension that would result from the downgrading of Andover Road. One can only conclude that there is a hidden agenda or some factor that has not been made public. There have been numerous other letters of late calling for somebody to justify this puzzling decision, but to date nobody has responded. Now you report that our council has approved the final plans despite unhappiness about the diversion of Andover Road. Not nearly as unhappy as drivers will be, crawling through a built-up area at 20 miles per hour, or the people living there breathing the added pollution. The only alternative offered is for Carla to restart the whole planning application. But we can't have that, can we? So is it too late to put your engines into reverse before the ship hits the iceberg? The city says it is, probably because our worthy councillors believe they will have seats in the lifeboats. The captain doubtless also thinks he will be able to put the blame for the navigational error on the 2 previous skippers who have jumped ship. The rest of us will have to sink or swim. Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
Why no illustration of traffic chaos? Sir, I intend to ignore making reference to the report regarding Barton Farm clears the final obstacle by treating it with the contempt it deserves. However, I would like to raise the issue of the artist's impressions in the new scheme. In addition to the singular item in the Chronicle, I also viewed 3 more lovely illustrations of which the artist was probably justly proud, but she failed to show one very relevant scene. I refer specifically to a typical scene depicting the congestion, mayhem and general chaos caused when the Andover Road North is diverted through the estate, especially when there is a diversion off from the A34. It would be difficult to depict the additional pollution caused when these log jams occur. I suspect the scenes shown are similar to those used by estate agents in their London offices to attract the potential high-flying purchasers with their Chelsea tractors to Winchester. No further comment needed. Tony Mundy, Hairstock, Winchester.
This letter's headed Room for Cars but Not for Buses and comes from Jenny Stables. Well, you don't know what you've got till it's gone, and the bus station is apparently going. It is in poor condition because for being marked for redevelopment for so long, but it is a wonderful asset in a sunny central position where you can sit on benches to wait opposite the Guildhall. A bus station is like a railway station. It can be shabby, neglected, or well-designed, vibrant travel hub with a community feel. Sadly, there's no longer room for a bus station, although there is for acres of car parking. After all, who apart from pensioners and other losers wants to catch a bus? In spite of poor air quality, congestion, parking charges and climate change, people still want to pop into town in their cars. A good bus station might just have helped redress the balance. As it is, we will be leaning up against our plastic perches along the north-facing side of the new development, eyeing two lanes of noisy, smelly traffic heading towards a car park. Well, I think that says it all. Jenny Stables, Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe, Winchester.
And on the same subject, Graham Cranmer of Abbotston, Alsford, says, "No queues in the boulevard, please." In your issue of April the 3rd, Martin Perry, Director of Retail Property Development at Henderson, supported by the City of Winchester Trust, assures us that in the absence of a bus station in the Silver Hill development, we will be able to purchase our tickets from a person in a ticket office. This could imply that Stagecoach, Blue Star and Velvet are preparing to remove the then redundant ticket machines and card scanners from their fleets. This would, of course, enable a single, if long, queue to be formed, so we don't have an untidy series of queues for individual buses cluttering up the Friars Gate Boulevard. It is this grasp of detail which shows how much confidence we can have in this scheme. Mr. Perry also offers us a seat when waiting for the number 22 bus at its own stop, which is most thoughtful, as this bus runs an irregular service between Newbury, Berkeley and Penwood. Inquiries may be addressed to Stagecoach Hants and Stagecoach Portsmouth at, respectively, Basingstoke and Chichester bus stations. Obviously, Winchester doesn't need one as well, does it? Graham Cranmer, Abbotston, Alsford.
This letter from Deborah Lane concerns new traffic controls at the Winnall roundabout. They've made bad situation worse. Sir, so the modifications at the Winnall roundabout are complete. New traffic controls are in place and signs telling you which lane to be in as you approach. It could not be easier, and there's no excuse for not knowing where you should be. Why, then, am I being hooted and glared at for following the rules? I live in Alsford, so want to go up the A31 after visiting Tesco or Homebase. Apparently, I meant to approach from the far right-hand lane, drift to the middle for the first set of lights, and across to the left lane for the second set before leaving the roundabout. I seem to be the only person who has looked at the new signposts, as most people who want to take the A31 sit in the middle lane at the approach. It is signed M3 North, and regard me as cutting them up, hence the horns and glares. There was a chance to sort it out once and for all, applying logic and making lane allocation safer, but it appears to have been missed. I remain horrified at the waste of public money, which has solved nothing and in fact has made a bad situation worse. Mrs. Deborah Lane, Shepherdsdown, Alsford.
This letter from Chris Sparks is nothing to do with traffic. And it's headed, "Time for the NHS Trust to come clean." Reading the piece about a new £120 million trauma centre between Winchester and Basingstoke, I have to ask, do we really need it? We have Southampton General, which has a helipad and takes the majority of cases needing these skills, while the QA covers the east of the county. Why duplicate what is already in place? In the late 1970s, Winchester was the major trauma centre, taking all those from the major arterial roads. A helipad was asked for, but due to the hospital's layout, there was no room to place one, so it was disbanded, and Southampton became the hub. Now that Winchester is under Basingstoke, the RHCH has slowly been downgraded to the extent that very little is now done on this site, and the university has taken more of the ground that was owned by the hospital. Why did the trust not come clean and say that what they want is to close the RHCH and move it all to Basingstoke under one roof and sell the RHCH to the uni for student accommodation and the old Nightingale wing for upmarket apartments? Who wants to travel to Basingstoke or Southampton for routine medical work or maternity? What we need is a hospital which services the large populace around Winchester, not a centre which will only serve a minority of people who are already being looked after by Southampton and Portsmouth. Chris Sparks, Alsford Road, Winchester.
A letter from Janet Lloyd of Winchester says, "Our city has more to offer than this. The Times has been running a series about the best locations in the UK for different types of house buyers. A recent edition concerned the 30 best places to live for single people. I was interested to find Winchester at number 27, though in spite of living here for 35 years, albeit married, I found it hard to recognise this description. Winchester is far more low-key than the neighbouring Cotswolds, but just as close to London. It has great architecture, a Michelin-starred restaurant, the Black Rat, and a lively local community that produces things such as Chesil, an amateur theatre space in a 12th-century church. Where did the information come from? Has the writer based the comments on a flying visit made en route to Gloucestershire from London, with no real idea where he or she was when calling in here for a meal and a play? I think we have more to offer. Janet Lloyd, Oliver's Battery Gardens, Winchester."
This letter from Simon Cook concerns in-house tenders. Dice loaded against in-house tender. "Sir, the recent letter from Peter Rees, River Park, appeared to be a mischievous attempt to involve me in the competitive render process won by DC Leisure in late 1993. At the time, I was Director of Leisure Services at the London Borough of Richmond-upon-Thames, having moved from Winchester in early 1991. Mr. Rees was also very unfair to the officers at the time the tender competition took place, because the then Chief Recreation Officer, Bill Ronan, would have been devastated to lose the tender. But the dice was loaded against in-house local authority bids when Margaret Thatcher's government introduced compulsory competitive tendering. My understanding is that Winchester's team put in a very soundly researched bid but could not match the savings offered by DC Leisure. My view remains that the chairman of Principal Scrutiny has been heavily involved in all decisions by the administration. This includes the process that produced the recommendation to build a replacement leisure centre at North Walls at a cost of £25 million plus. Indeed, he, Councillor Chris Pines, first attended the working group supporting the delivery of the agreed project as early as July 2013. The fact that these proposals generated considerable unease was the reason that an informal scrutiny group was formed. Simon Cook, City Councillor, The Aylesfords."
"Alfred's a winner for Winchester," says David Hoggart. "Good to see your coverage of the Winchester Real Ale and Cider Festival, but what you were unable to mention, because the votes had not been counted then, was the winner of the beer festival. For the second year running, it was an ale from local brewery Alfred's in Winall. And not only did Alfred's Winchester Pale Ale come first, but their Gold Wyvern came third in the votes. Alfred's has been a huge success since it was launched under 2 years ago, and the brewer, Steve Haig, deserves all our congratulations for bringing such benefits to the city. I'm a fan, and always seek out Saxon Bronze or others of Steve's beers when visiting local pubs. David Hoggett, Northbrook Avenue, Winchester. And can I just say, hear, hear?
Well, I think we all needed a beer after all that pollution and traffic problems, don't you? But thank you very much, everyone, for that. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That number again, 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase and no spaces. Or you could write to the editor in the good old-fashioned way at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going to move on to historical items. Anne-Marie is going to begin by going back 25 years for us.
And this article and letter concerns how the hospital resists government plan, and it's April the 14th, 1989. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital Winchester is resisting pressure from the government to say by May the 9th that it is interested in opting out. Doctors say the government is rushing through plans for self-governing status. This means trusts would run the bigger NHS hospitals independently of district health authorities, employing their own staff and setting their own pay scales. Mr. Paddy Ross, who practices at RHCH, is chairman of the British Medical Association Consultants Committee. He said of the government's approach, "I think it has the potential to lead to the disintegration of the National Health Service." And this a letter follows this. "Sir, further to your report on the demolition of properties in Eastgate Street, we would like to draw your attention to the rather dubious circumstances surrounding the Winchester City Council's decision to allow yet more wanton destruction of sound but neglected Regency housing in the city centre. We do not believe there were 361 letters supporting the demolition of these buildings. We understand that these letters were pre-copied petitions dictated and organised by the developer of the site, placed in their veterinary surgery and signed by grateful customers on the basis of vague information provided to them."
50 years ago, April the 11th, 1964, the heading is "Unfortunate Look to Guildhall Rear." Many and varied were the adjectives applied by members of Winchester City Council on Wednesday night to the appearance of the rear of the Guildhall, which looks to the south towards the cathedral and the new hotel. All were apparently agreed that this aspect of the city's municipal buildings is unfortunate, to say the least. But not so unanimous were the opinions of what should be done about it. Before the council was a report from the town clerk and city engineer outlining tentative proposals for the redevelopment of the area bounded by the Broadway, Colebrook Street and Abbey Passage. The second item, the Minister of Housing and Local Government was criticised at a meeting of Hampshire County Council Planning Committee on Friday last week for not consulting the committee before introducing his controversial southeast study. Mr. Wheatley, clerk to the council, estimated that the influx planned in the study and the natural increase of population would result in Hampshire's population rising by 500,000 before 1981. There were still many questions to be answered.
100 years ago, April the 11th, 1914. Mayor to open picture house. by advertisement in another column, it will be seen that the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Harry Seeley, will perform the opening ceremony in connection with the Winchester Picture House in the High Street on Tuesday afternoon next at 2:30 p.m. The theatre is fast approaching completion, practically all that is left to do being one or two final touches of embellishment. The exterior design of the building facing onto the High Street is quite in keeping with the old-world character of the main arterial thoroughfare of the city. And a second item. May I, through your columns, draw the attention of your readers to the fact that the Dogs Protection Bill is to come on for second reading in the House of Commons upon April the 17th. All dog lovers who desire the release of dogs from the horrors of vivisection are earnestly asked to write to their members of Parliament, asking them to give the bill every support. Surely no dog owner would care to see his own pet submitted to such tortures as are inflicted. So let us do all we can to save all the poor creatures.
And we've already whizzed to 200 years ago. This is April the 18th, 1814. The first of these two items is entitled Paris Surrenders to Allied Forces. It is with the utmost exultation that we communicate the glorious and long-wished-for intelligence of the entrance of the Allies into Paris. And we trust that the reign of Bonaparte is now ceased and that he is completely driven out from his usurpation. The Extraordinary Gazette, in the Tuppenny page, details operations of the armies previous to the occupation of the capital. It appears that after a series of hard-fought battles, Blücher and Schwarzenberg outmaneuvered Bonaparte and got between him and Paris, which surrendered, by capitulation, on the 30th ult. And the second item is quite a different subject, on forgery. It is alarming to reflect on the increasing commission of the crime of forgery. On Saturday morning, no less than five men forfeited their lives for this offence. And within a few hours after, the crime was committed again by a boy, only 13 years of age. He was brought to Bow Street office, charged with having uttered a forged draft on Messrs Brooks & Co. in Chancery Lane. It purported to be for £10, in letters, but only for £5 in the margin, and to be drawn by John Fraser, a gentleman who kept cash at their house. The boy was questioned as to where he got it, when he answered, from Mr. F., but afterwards he said, from a man whom he did not know. And we're moving on now to Your Say, which is this week from Robin.
And Your Say this week asks the question, in light of Saharan dust triggering pollution issues, just how polluted is Winchester and how is this affected by traffic? Mandy Pike, 47, shop owner of Peninsula Road, Winchester, said, it is too polluted. We need to get people on public transport, but it's so pricey they don't. More needs to be done to get people using the park and ride. Carolyn Tudor, 34, music teacher of Archers Road, Eastleigh, said, it has a lot to do with external sources. I don't think the Saharan dust was a real issue. I was annoyed, however, because I'd just cleaned my car. Jamie Monkcombe, 26, operational assistant of Badger Farm, said, I was in Scotland and everything was covered in dust. That said, I don't think it's too polluted. It's a city, and cars are driving through every day. And Claire Arnold, 46, a bookkeeper of Norton, said, there is no park and ride on the northern side, which would be a good idea. It is terribly congested, but I do drive in myself because there aren't really the facilities in the direction I live.
And unsurprisingly, the editorial comment of the Hampshire Chronicle this week is concerned with pollution. It's headed, The Real Challenge of Cutting Pollution. Startled city council workers were confronted with protesters who stormed their offices last week. The intrusion was caused by around 40 green campaigners who were demanding that the council chiefs take action over poor air quality in the city. Waving banners and chanting, they arrived at the Guildhall to present a copy of a complaint that Keith Taylor, Green Party MEP, is handing to the European Commission this week. The Commission has taken the first steps towards prosecuting the government for failing to meet air quality targets, and Mr. Taylor says Winchester City Council may have to contribute towards any subsequent fine. Harmful carbon emissions in the city centre are amongst the highest in Hampshire. Not surprisingly, as the district's only air quality management equipment is placed on the corner of Upper Brook Street and St George's Street, otherwise known as a car park. The City Council is right to say it alone cannot solve air quality problems, but it must not be complacent. It and other public bodies must take a lead. But the responsibility ultimately lies with all of us to change our behaviour in such a way as to have a positive effect on bringing down pollution levels. That's the real challenge. Anne Maria will read us first person, please.
This article by Khalid Aziz concerns the privatisation of the Royal Mail and is headed "Not a Precise Science, More of a Black Art." The privatisation of Royal Mail was not the government's finest hour. No amount of post-event justification by ministers could avoid the stark reality that the taxpayers did not get anywhere near the benefit they should have. So why was this? And how could it be avoided? You have to accept that when a politician makes a decision, it becomes policy, and civil servants are driven by an almost visceral need to carry out policy, for if they do so, they cannot be accused of wrongdoing. Trouble is, policy is often blind to the realities of life, particularly the marketplace. For example, those of us living and working in rural Hampshire are at a disadvantage because although the policy of rolling out high-speed broadband for all is clearly a government intention, it doesn't work when the mechanics of appointing contractors to do the work result in BT having a virtual monopoly. They make arrangements to suit themselves, leaving many rural areas to dangle in the breeze. That battle continues. Back to Royal Mail. With privatisations, and there will be more to come, the government relies rightly on advisers. How could it be wrong to seek advice from recognised market experts such as Goldman Sachs and City Blue Bloods, Lazards? Such advisers are always asked the same questions. What is the appetite for this privatisation amongst investors, both institutional and small? What is the maximum the market will pay for the shares? To be fair, such judgments are not a precise science, more a black art. Markets move, sentiments change, but of course the Royal Mail market was in effect restricted. As with so many privatisations, large institutions are lined up to take large tranches of shares. Small investors, so-called SIDs, are usually restricted to tiny numbers of shares, making it relatively expensive to buy into any sell-off. The small investor allocation for Royal Mail was 24 times oversubscribed. Policy drives the need for certainty, the need to get the shares away. So clever civil servants in the Treasury, the people we trust to run the nation's finances, came up with a wizard wheeze to ensure that in the event of a post-sell-off price hike, there would be no profiteering. There was a gentleman's agreement. Sadly, the institutions who subsequently sold are not staffed by gentlemen and probably never were. So when the shares started trading and the price rocketed, they sold half their stake, effectively recouping their original investment. To the observer, it's puzzling that there was no clawback to make it less attractive to break the gentleman's agreement. Or perhaps the gentleman could face the opprobrium of public opinion. Trouble is, the reputation of financial services is already in tatters. There is no lower to go. And the gentlemen don't care. As they never tire of telling us, they can work anywhere.
Thank you, Maria. And we're just going to move on to Belgarum, that alternative look at the news. And I think Jerry has two items from them. Thank you.
And the first one is headed, Shining Example or Ruination of Our Countryside, and refers to a photograph taken last week in White Hill Lane, I beg your pardon, Alsford, which shows the nearly completed solar farm on arable land to the east of Sun Lane. For some, it is a bright and shining example of the green technology that's starting to address global warming and climate change. Sheep can even graze under the panels. To others, it is the start of a new age of industrialisation that threatens to despoil views across our countryside. The City Council has given planning to three other schemes at Funtley, Southwark and Shedfield, all in the southern parishes. And the second item, very short, Tory team are three of a kind. Can there have been a more successful electoral trio in Winchester political history? The same three councillors have represented the rural ward of Wanston and Mitchell Dever for the Conservatives for the last 10 years. Barry Lipscombe, Stephen Godfrey and Malcolm Wright have been in office since 2004.
And we can move on now to what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. But first, a note for your diary about a Talking Newspapers event. Our annual general meeting is on Tuesday, the 6th of May, starting at 2 o'clock, and it will be held at the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. Malcolm Wells is the national speaker of Canine Partners, the organisation which provides specially trained dogs for people with disabilities. He'll be talking to us about the valuable work of his organisation. The AGM is open to all listeners, friends and volunteers, so do come if you can. You'll be made very welcome. It's a very friendly and relaxed occasion and our speakers are always entertaining and informative. The after-meeting tea is very good too. And on to things around Winchester and District. The Theatre Royal in Winchester has a lot to offer over the next few weeks. The wonderful show Copacabana is on from Wednesday the 16th of April to the 19th, Saturday. Saturdays are 2:30 matinee and then the other evenings are 7:30 p.m. start. And then Ed Byrne with the title Roaring Forties on Wednesday and Thursday, April 23rd and 24th at 7:30. And then Morecambe, the famous Eric Morecambe. I think this is an impersonator. On Friday, the 25th of April at 7:30 and Saturday, April the 26th at 8 p.m. And further on in time at the Royal, two productions which might interest you. First, HMS Pinafore, unusually an all-male production, and that's had very, very good national reviews. This is on Monday the 5th to Saturday the 10th of May. And As You Like It, Shakespeare presented by the excellent Tobacco Factory of Bristol. It's from Tuesday the 3rd to Saturday the 7th of June. For all those items, you can book tickets and get more information from the Theatre Royal box office, telephone number 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. Elsewhere, Hillier Gardens in Romsey. The exhibition, Inspired by Nature, is showing until Monday the 21st of April. It features the work of Ali Lindley and Daphne Elman and the sculptor Paul Harvey. The exhibition is open daily from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. and the admission is free. What a lovely way to spend a day at Hillier's Gardens. And further afield in Salisbury, in the peaceful close of Salisbury Cathedral this time, a sculpture exhibition by John Main, RA, will run until the 23rd of July. The exhibition is called Sanctuary, and it aims to encourage visitors with the meanings, to understand the meanings of sanctuary, not least as a place of safety and refuge. There's a programme of events, too, supporting this exhibition, but for more details, please call 01722 555 124. That's 01722 555 124. Or visit the website of Salisbury Cathedral, which is www.salisburycathedral.org.uk, all lowercase and no spaces. And in our regular features, one more announcement for you, lighting up times. On Saturday, the 12th of April, lights go off at 6:17 a.m. and on again at 7:56 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 16th of April, lights go out at 6:09 a.m. with lighting up time at 8:02 p.m. Summer really is a-coming in. And now we can move on to the general news items with the first article, please read for us by Maria.
Bonfire night is just the ticket. Organisers hail ticket entry at launch party. This year's Winchester Bonfire Night will again be a ticket-only affair after the success of last year's celebrations, organisers have confirmed. Winchester Roundtable members were joined by sponsors and supporters at a special launch party last week to discuss arrangements for this November's event. The new chairman of Roundtable, Gareth Bloomfield, said the focus this year was making sure the event was affordable. He said, "What we were finding was that in the past there were a lot of people coming in from outside of the city and exploiting that it was a free event. At one stage there were 35,000 people in the city, yet the average donation was working out at less than 5p a head. It costs us 35,000 to put on, and people weren't giving enough to support that cost. And it was the sponsors who saved us, as well as people buying things for on the night. For local causes it was great, but for local people it wasn't. However, in terms of cost, the event wouldn't run if it wasn't ticketed. And now we're able to give many more thousands of people to good causes than we were able to before. As a local resident of Winchester all my life, I perceived there was this was something put on by the City Council. But it's 15 local guys in the Round Table who put it on."
£63 million bill to clean up flood damage. The final bill for dealing with the worst winter storms in Hampshire for centuries is more than £63 million, according to an official report. The figure revealed the true scale of the damage done to the county's infrastructure and the expense of trying to prevent widespread flooding across the region. The bombshell bill also comes as the government said it could only spare Hampshire County Council £11.5 million towards repairing its roads. And it follows the council's £90 million budget cut that will see 1,000 posts lost by March 2015. Council leader, Councillor Roy Perry, who was set to discuss the impact of the floods at a cabinet meeting this week, said he would be asking the government for more help. He said, "We'll be bidding for more resources, bearing in mind we estimate that another £25 million is needed to fix damaged roads alone." He added, "I am conscious also that a lot of businesses in Hampshire have suffered, and we have been exploring what help there is available in that respect, as well as for individual householders." Councillor Perry has had a meeting with Local Government Minister Brandon Lewis on the impact of the flooding, but he said he would be planning a further meeting with the Department of Communities and Local Government to press Hampshire's case for extra cash. Along with Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, Councillor Perry said he would be hosting an event recognising the efforts of people and organisations during floods on a date to be announced after Easter. He added, "We intend to find an appropriate way to express the county's thanks to the volunteers who were the saints and saviours of flooding within Hampshire." Meanwhile, Test Valley Borough Council is considering giving a three-month tax discount for people whose properties have been affected by flooding. Proposals to help flood victims will go before the borough's cabinet on April the 16th, and the full council the next day. The discount would apply to anyone whose day-to-day activities were adversely affected as a result of flooding between December the 1st last year and March the 31st. And the article is illustrated by a picture of Guy Blundell and Isaac Whitcomb both paddling an inflated canoe through the floods in Winchester with an inset picture of County Council leader Roy Perry.
Ken rekindles love affair with cathedrals. Writer Ken Follett was in town last week, waxing lyrical about Winchester Cathedral. One of the best-known authors of the last 30 years, Mr. Follett was marking the 25th anniversary of one of his most talked-about books, The Pillars of the Earth. The cathedral was built in the 12th century, when Winchester was the most important town in England, largely because the king's treasury was here, so it had to play a big role, he said. It's very important to me that you can still see the medieval layout of Winchester. You can walk around and visualise the sights and sounds that were there before. The interesting thing about cathedrals is why they are there. We know they were very difficult and expensive to build, and we know that many people were extremely poor and did not have the right tools to build such an important building. The book prompted cathedral officials to ask him to present a talk entitled Why Cathedrals? As part of a tour around some of the country's most iconic churches. He said, I still take the same pleasure in cathedrals that allowed me to write the book in the first place. Regardless of whether you're religious or not, there's something spiritual that happens when you enter a cathedral. There's a spiritual calm that falls over you with the cold air, and part of that is because these places have been here for so many years. And there's a picture of Mr. Follett enjoying an exhibition, or a model, I suppose it is, at Winchester Cathedral, which shows the building of the cathedral back in the 12th century.
Hotel makes a difference to Heroes Charity. A Winchester hotel has been working with a charity which aims to improve the lives of disabled or injured servicemen and women. The Holiday Inn at Mourne Hill opened its doors to former members of the armed forces who were en route to take part in a training exercise with Hounds for Heroes, a charity that helps them to rehabilitate with the support of specially trained dogs. Alan Parton, vice chairman and founder of Hounds for Heroes, said, "There are 900,000 injured service personnel in this country, and it is heartening to know that the team at the Holiday Inn care enough to want to make a difference by helping some of our Hounds for Heroes clients with such perfect accessible accommodation for free, and their generous offer of complimentary room hire for fundraising events and meetings as well." Siobhan Thomason, general manager at the hotel, said, "We are all thrilled with this connection to Hounds for Heroes, and to be able to do something really positive and practical to help the injured and disabled service people who are in training with their dogs. The charity is such a perfect fit for us, as we are located in a significant military town, and the hotel's location here at Mourne Hill was an important historic World War I site, which we believe is when service dogs were created to help those injured in the Great War." And there's a lovely picture with this article with Alan Parton outside the Holiday Inn with Sarah Waddington, the sales manager, and a beautiful yellow Labrador.
This item is under the heading of News Roundup. Hyde 900 has busy year in prospect. Hyde 900 members and their guests enjoyed a preview of the plans for 2014 at a private lunch for the New Year's programme held in Winchester City Football Club's clubhouse. Founder Edward Fennell and visual arts coordinator Sophie Cunningham-Dorr spoke of their experiences working on the BBC Two documentary The Search for Alfred the Great, which focused on the mystery of the unmarked grave in St Bartholomew's churchyard. They recalled their feelings about the extraordinary results revealed, and as members of a small community organisation working so closely with the nation's foremost broadcaster. Much of the following question and answer session centred on what might now follow in relation to the site of the royal burials, about which there are differing views. Chairman Steve Marper said, "We never expected the outcome to indicate Hyde Abbey itself should be re-excavated, but that is what expert opinion believes. Initiating and completing such a project will require careful work with key stakeholders such as the City Council and Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden. Working in partnership, it is, however, well within our remit to at least attempt to take this forward. Whether or not it takes place, Hyde 900 will work towards an information area within the Abbey precincts. It will draw on the successful Stones of Hyde Abbey project, led by David Spurling. The Art of Conversation series is to be relaunched as Hyde in Conversation, and will include a number of locals. This year, a journalist, lawyer, artist, TV producer and publican. The format will remain the same, with star interviewers Bill Lucas and Jenny Cuff. It opens on April the 16th, when Economist journalist John Andrews is interviewed by Professor Lucas.
Veterans roll back the years. Classic cars will be taking to the rural lanes of West Hampshire and South Wiltshire later in this month in aid of Naomi House. All donations to the Standard Motor Club New Forest Group's annual Classic Charity Drive on April the 27th will go to the Sutton Scotney-based hospice. The 40-mile route includes Michelmersh and Timsbury, Belbins, King's Somborne, Crawley, Barton Stacey, Long Parish, Andover, Middle Wallop and Stockbridge. Cars will set off from the club's HQ at the Bear and Ragged Staff at Michelmersh at 11:30 a.m. Daryl Cunningham, who lives at King's Somborne, will lead the drive in his 75-year-old blue standard Flying 8 Tourer named Stan. "We should have at least 60 cars taking part, but I'm hoping to get about 100, he said. "Classic bikes and even tractors are welcome, and there's no charge. But a collection will be made in aid of Naomi House." And there is a photograph of Daryl Cunningham at the wheel of Stan, his standard Flying 8 Tourer.
Fears over airport's expansion plans. Opponents urged to join consultation exercise. A plan by a Hampshire airport to expand would bring more planes to the skies above parts of Winchester, it is feared. TAG, Farnborough Airport, largely used for business and VIP jets, has started a public consultation ahead of submitting its airspace change proposal to the UK Civil Aviation Authority, CAA. But those objecting to the plan say they would see its controlled airspace increase to almost twice the size of Gatwick's, with low-altitude flights over towns and villages. Planes bound for other airports would be forced to take longer flight paths to avoid it. Currently, there are 25,000 flights in and out of Farnborough a year, but permission is already in place to increase that number to 50,000 until 2019. If the proposals go ahead, towns across Hampshire, Dorset and West Sussex, including the east of Winchester, Alresford and the Itchen Valley, would face an increase in flights overhead. The public consultation lasts until May the 2nd, and many residents and politicians are up in arms about how best to tackle the issue, which some say could see the collision risk rise sevenfold. Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, said he is working closely with neighbouring MPs, gliding clubs and the Department for Transport to find out what the proposal means for his constituency, Opponents of the proposals have described them as a land grab of the skies. And when you consider TAG is reportedly applying for approximately twice the volume of controlled airspace that London Gatwick Airport uses to handle just over 34 million passengers per year, you can see their point, he said. Penny Flemons, chairman of Itchen Valley Parish Council, said the situation only recently came to her attention, despite the consultation opening in February, and she felt the airport hadn't done enough to inform local people. She said, "I just think that we have to be watchful. These people aren't doing it for our benefit, they're doing it for theirs. So we have to look out for ourselves. I'm disappointed that they didn't consult us. We've only got until May the 2nd to respond. TAG is a business and is only interested in theory in small business jets. But the sort of airspace they're asking for is bigger than Southampton Airport." John Bastin, pilot of 40 years and spokesman for the Lasham Gliding Club based in Alton, the largest of its kind in the world, said the consultation doesn't inform people sufficiently. The general point is that they have produced this major so-called technical document. It's not a technical document. It's an art form in misdirection and misinformation which misleads people, he said. The analogy is that this is the equivalent of a private limousine company commandeering two lanes of the M25 motorway for its own exclusive use.
Girls fashion a link with the Gambia. Schoolgirls in Winchester have been helping young women in Africa with a creative new project. Since July 2013, Winchester Sir Optimists have been busy making 136 dresses for their sister club, SI Banjul, in the Gambia. The club runs a number of projects with young women and girls in the rural areas of this poor part of West Africa, where the dresses will be distributed to deserving girls who may not own a dress other than their school uniform. Working on the premise that every girl deserves a dress, girls from Test Valley, Henry Beaufort and St Swithin's, as well as local girl guides and rangers, created the dresses which are made of recycled pillowcases. On March the 24th, the Society held a celebration ahead of the dresses being shipped to recognise the girls' work and heard from similar projects in the Gambia. Anne Hill, a textiles teacher at Henry Beaufort School, said 35 of her Year 10 students were involved. "I thought it was wonderful," she said. "It fitted in nicely with their recycling project, and they enjoyed making them, knowing that they would make a difference to other people's lives." And the article is illustrated by a picture of girls from Test Valley School holding up and I think probably wearing some of the dresses that they have produced.
Fundraisers set for marathon effort. Fundraisers from across Hampshire are on their marks to join around 35,000 people to run the Virgin Money London Marathon this weekend. Among them is 41-year-old Matthew Southey of Romsey, who'll be running in support of Trinity Winchester, a shelter for the homeless that helps people rebuild their lives. Mr. Southey, who weighed in at 20 stone before training started, suffers from Crohn's disease and asthma, but said he was inspired to run for the charity after seeing the work it does firsthand. He said, "When you're there, you realise that no matter where you are in your life, it doesn't take much for it all to go wrong, and for you to find yourself in the same position. There are young kids there, and it's heartbreaking. You would have to have a heart of stone not to throw yourself into it." Neil Chadwick, 44, of Twyford, will run for Queen Elizabeth Hospital, Birmingham, after his mother Jacqueline received a life-saving liver transplant from his brother Andrew 3 years ago, under its care. Nick said, "Well, it's quite amazing, really. It was between me and my brother drew the short straw. So now it is my turn to do something and give something back to the hospital that helped us so much." Kingsworthy Football Club treasurer, 42-year-old James Marshall, is aiming to raise £1,000 for DEBRA, a national charity that works on behalf of people in the UK with the genetic skin blistering condition epidermolysis bullosa. The father of two said, "It's ghastly. I know a couple of people through work who've had children with this, and myself and my colleagues have supported the charity in the past." Parents of cystic fibrosis sufferer and Tichborne resident Emma Stewart, now 33, were told she would not live past her seventh birthday, and she will take on the mammoth course in the hope of inspiring people like herself. Biology teacher at Peter Simmons College Louise Porter will run with her partner Johnny for bowel cancer charity GUTS, in memory of his mother, who died of the disease in 2012. Michael Clark, a retired geography teacher from Perrin School, wants to raise funds to build a bridge in Ghana. And Dee Ateo, 47, from Durley, is running for dementia charity ARUK. Also running is Keith Miller from Winchester, he's 45, and he will run for a loved one after his wife Beatrice was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2011.
Peveril votes Student Watch a winner. The first students to take part in Barton Peveril's new Student Watch scheme have been presented with police support volunteer certificates by Hampshire Constabulary. Student Watch is a volunteering opportunity available to all Barton Peveril students. Many of those involved are interested in public service careers, but the experience gained is a valuable addition to any university or job application. Students who take part are also eligible to request references based on their contribution. The scheme harnesses the power of volunteer support to increase awareness of police-led initiatives in the field of crime prevention and the safety of both people and their property. Activities carried out by the group included a cycle coding session, a firearms and knife education event, phone logging awareness, and monitoring vehicle speeds in the vicinity of the college. There's a photo included with this article with a group of the students showing their certificates, along with Laura Fisher and PCSO Bob Finch.
5,000 flights for Saviour in the sky. Milestone reached for County's Air Ambulance. Hampshire's life-saving Air Ambulance has undertaken its 5,000th mission since it began operating 7 years ago. Since 2007, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has saved thousands of people in life-threatening situations. It takes just 4 minutes to get in the air in an emergency and costs £4,000 a day to run. Its milestone mission involved an elderly patient collected from the Isle of Wight who was taken to the mainland for an emergency heart operation. Charity patron Ailsa Montague, wife of Lord Montague's son Rafe, said, "I am very proud to be patron of such a talented and dedicated team of professionals who provide this life-saving service to the people of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight." Last year, the Air Ambulance made a commitment to having a doctor on board for every mission in 2015, and the charity is set to meet this target with doctor-led crews for most missions. Since the start of flying operations 6 years ago, the service has steadily been expanding its reach to the community, with steps that have already included an upgraded helicopter and longer operating hours. Next year, they hope to be able to fly throughout the night. And the article is illustrated by a picture with the caption, "Lifesaver, the Air Ambulance."
Village Festival set to celebrate Jane Austen. A Hampshire village will be celebrating 9 days of all things Jane Austen when its festival kicks off this summer. From Saturday, June the 21st, to Sunday, June the 29th, Chawton and nearby market town of Alton will host the Jane Austen Regency Week. The village is home to Jane Austen's House Museum, the building where the author spent the last 8 years of her life and wrote 6 novels. This year marks the 200th anniversary of the publication of Mansfield Park. The festival boasts a range of activities and events, including an all-day old-fashioned cricket contest with players in period costumes, a unique readathon with guests reading their favourite Mansfield Park excerpts, an elegant and entertaining evening of music and drama from Jane Austen's era, a Regency choral evensong, as well as tea and tours at Chawton House and Gardens.
Long-serving Ray to stand down. They all stood and applauded. Councillors and officers paid their respects to a long-serving and much-liked colleague, Ray Pearce, who is standing down as a councillor at the next election. Councillor Pearce, 76, has served the people of the St Paul ward in Winchester for 28 years. A former shop manager, he was mayor in 1994 to 95, and was first elected to represent the Full Flood area for the Liberal Democrats in 1986. Paying tribute, Liberal Democrat leader Kelsey Lerner said, "What can you say when you are saying goodbye to the father of the house after 28 years? Ray is a genuine Wintonian, born in Clifton Road inside the ward he represents. He worked in Winchester all his life and still lives in Cheriton Road." Councillor Pearce said, "It has been a long time, but I have enjoyed every moment of it. The best of it is the friendships I have made on all the parties. Politics never came into it. I will miss you all and thank you for your friendship." Councillor Pearce said he would not entirely give up on public life, as he hopes still to serve on charities. Also standing down is fellow veteran Brian Collin, also first elected in 1986, Councillor leader Keith Wood, as previously reported, Tony Coates, portfolio holder for housing, and Linda Bannister.
Budget cuts place town police base in jeopardy. The future of a busy town centre police station hangs in the balance. Eastleigh's police station has been put under threat after Hampshire Constabulary revealed it was once again reviewing the number of buildings it owns as part of an ongoing bid to shave millions of pounds from its budget. Negotiations have been underway behind the scenes with Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service and Eastleigh Borough Council over a space-sharing initiative. But police chiefs maintain no firm decisions have been made. Last weekend saw around a dozen campaigners demonstrating outside the police station in Lee Road, protesting against the cuts. John Edwards, 58, from Romsey, but who lives in Eastleigh for 22 years, said, "It's a retrograde idea. It's going to affect confidence for the public. These cuts affect everyone." The proposal comes just weeks after the force announced sweeping £25 million cuts, including job losses and station closures. News of the uncertainty surrounding the Lee Road headquarters has been greeted with outrage by one local councillor, who described the facility as a safe haven for people in the town. Andy Moore, who represents Eastleigh East on Hampshire County Council, said, "It's absolutely terrible news. Our politicians are telling us that crime is down in the town, but there are not enough police to make the reports. I am appalled." He added, "Being able to go to a police station is a form of reassurance for victims of crime. Eastleigh is a central point in the area. We do not want to be shutting police stations. We need to reinvest." UKIP supporters organised the demonstration outside the headquarters last Saturday. Councillor Keith House, leader of Eastleigh Borough Council, said savings need to be made to ensure frontline policing remains in the town. He said, "The police have been working through the estate strategy for a number of years and have to make sure they save money for frontline policing. That is what matters most. The key is a police presence in the centre. It's not about buildings, it's about safety. UKIP are being deeply irresponsible if they're trying to suggest policing in the town is at threat. As part of the cost-cutting measures revealed earlier this year, Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes confirmed that further underused and expensive police stations will be closed to make savings from the estate's budget. At the time, it was not known which police stations were at risk, but Mr. Hayes said that the introduction of cheaper beat stations had been a success within some communities. A PCC spokesman said nothing had been decided and that a further report would be released later this month. And there are two illustrations, one of the UKIP-organised protest against the police station cuts and also a picture of Eastleigh Police Station in Lee Road.
Electoral system to stay the same. Winchester City councillors have rejected the chance to radically alter their electoral system. The City Council holds three elections in a four-year cycle, with a third of members going to the polls each time. The Liberal Democrats proposed changing it to the all-out system, whereby all councillors stand at the same time once every 4 years. However, the Conservatives and Labour combined to block the move at a special council meeting. Support by two-thirds of the vote was needed, but the Lib Dem proposal got 25 votes compared to 29 against, or 46%. The benefits of all-out were said to be less cost, a stable four-year term for any administration, and the avoidance of voter fatigue with three elections every 4 years. The fourth year stages the county council elections. Advantages of election by thirds are greater accountability, regular engagement with voters, and a reduced impact from an influx of new councillors. The council consulted the public, and 161 people responded, with 52% preferring the current system, compared to 48% for change. Of 16 parish councils which responded, 13 favoured no change. But the full council heard that change is coming, with Winchester set to have the number of members cut from 57 to possibly as low as 42. Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney said the Boundary Commission had told Winchester that keeping election by thirds will mean having three-member wards, which would have to be far bigger than now.
£500,000 repairs for stately home. Staff at one of Hampshire's grandest stately homes are working around the clock to get it shipshape. Storms forced the closure of Hinton Apner House after a third of the roof was destroyed by ferocious winds in February. Now the National Trust property is facing a repair bill of anywhere up to £500,000. Louise Washington, visitor experience officer at Hinton Apner, said, "From the outside, it doesn't look like there is any damage, so people are confused as to why we're closed. But it's lucky no one was out wandering around when the roof came off, because it could have killed someone."
Open Day celebrates Emmaus Landmark. Emmaus in Winchester is celebrating its fifth anniversary later this month. The community is based at Bar End and provides shelter and work for men who have been homeless. The charity runs two shops, one at Bar End and the other in Eastleigh. The open day will be on Saturday, April the 26th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Winchester and 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Eastleigh. There will be a 10% discount on most items in the store.
Ladies get some top tips from Ace Chefs. Members of Hampshire Women's Institute had a chance to brush up on more than just jam-making skills at a special event at Winchester Hotel. Dozens of members of the WI visited Leinston House at Sparsholt for a cookery demonstration by chefs Ollie Rouse and Andy McKenzie. After getting some top tips from the best in the business, the group had a chance to enjoy some of the fruits of their labour with a lunch. And there's a very jolly photograph of the WI ladies, many of whom look as though they've enjoyed a lot of good lunches.
New strategy to help the homeless. New plans are underway to reduce the number of homeless people in Winchester. City Council officers want to introduce more preventive measures to reduce homelessness. Officers said it was crucial to tackle the causes, such as substance abuse, domestic violence and mental illness, rather than simply house people temporarily. Councillors praised the work of district agencies which have worked hard over the last few years to help homeless people, citing work done by Trinity Housing Shelter and the development of the Wet Shelter. Cabinet Chairman Councillor Tony Coates said, "We currently have a programme with regards to people discharged from hospital or prison to ensure they are not discharged to no fixed abode without us being made aware and proper arrangements being made. We also have the No Second Night programme, which works very well, which has seen Trinity step forward and take on an extra 10 people. We have a hostel for domestic violence victims to help them find their way."
And those are the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle that we have for you this week. We hope you've enjoyed this edition. We're all looking forward to reading for you again in May. I just need to remind you again that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. 870 370. And again, thanks to our editors, Bill and Irene. Also to the hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you all to our readers. Thank you, Jerry.
Goodbye.
And Robin.
Goodbye.
And special thanks to Maria for standing in for Claire.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Hope you have a very good week. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. Do have a good week and thank you for listening.